Fortitude squinted as the disc slowly maximized its intensity, revealing a ring of towers stretching around the dome. Each of the twisting spires was held aloft by anti-grav units that were many orders of magnitude more powerful than the one in the Minister of Fortitude's chair. Although some towers were more subdued, such as the one that held the cleric's cell, all of them shared the same basic structure. Spikes of volcanic rock from the city's base shot through with metal supports and covered with plates of decorative alloy. Now that morning had come, it was easier to pick out individuals in the commuting swarm. Ungoy packed together on hulking barges, San Shum in chairs similar to Fortitude's, and here and there, strapped into sleek anti-grav backpacks, tall and muscular Sangeli. These blue-skinned, shark-eyed warriors were the San Shum's protectors, though this had not always been so. Both the San Shum and the Sangeli had evolved on planets rich in Forerunner relics. Both species believed these highly advanced pieces of technology were deserving of their worship, clear evidence of the Forerunner's divine powers. But only the San Shum had been bold enough to dismantle some of their relics and use them to make practical objects of their own design. To the Sangeli, this was blasphemy. But the San Shum believed there was no sin in searching for greater wisdom, and moreover, were convinced that such investigations were critical to discovering how to follow in their god's footsteps. This fundamental difference in the practical application of religious ethics sparked a long and bloody war that began soon after the two species made contact on a disputed reliquary world inside a Sangeli-occupied system. In terms of ships and soldiers, the Sangeli started the fight with a distinct numerical advantage. They were also better warriors, stronger, faster, and more disciplined. In a straight-up infantry clash, one Sangeli was worth at least 10 San Shum. With most of the fighting taking place in space and ship-to-ship, however, the San Shum had their own advantage, a single semi-operable Forerunner dreadnought that decimated the Sangeli fleets with hit-and-run attacks. For a very long time, the Sangeli took their knocks, ignoring the obvious fact that victory would require committing the sins of their enemy, desecrating their own relics, and using them to improve their warships, arms, and armor. Not surprisingly, millions of Sangeli had died before the proud and hidebound species decided abnegation was preferable to obliteration. With heavy hearts, their warrior priests began their work, eventually assembling a fleet capable of fighting the San Shum and their dreadnought to a standstill. As devastating as this decision was to most Sangeli, the wisest of their leaders knew they hadn't sinned so much as finally come to terms with their own desire for deeper understanding of the literal articles of their faith. And for their part, the San Shum had to make their own painful admission. If there were other creatures as dangerous and dogged as the Sangeli in the galaxy, their chances of survival would be greatly increased if they allied with their enemy. Had the Sangeli watched their backs while they went about their holy work. Thus was the Covenant born. A union fraught with mutual suspicion, but given a good chance of success by a clear division of labor codified in the Writ of Union, the treaty that officially ended the conflict. Now the Covenant's most important piece of scripture, the Writ began, "So full of hate were our eyes that none of us could see. Our war would yield countless dead, but never victory. So let us cast arms aside and like discard our wrath. Thou in faith will keep us safe whilst we find the path." The treaty was formalized with the decommissioning of the dreadnought. The ancient vessel was stripped of all its weapons, or at least all the San Shum knew it possessed, and permanently installed at the center of High Charity's then partially constructed dome. Fortitude was not as devout as other prophets. He believed in the great journey, to be sure, but by vocation, he was more technocrat than theologian. And yet, as the minister rose through a pocket of less crowded air, he couldn't help but feel a rush of spiritual invigoration as the dreadnought's grand tripodal frame began to glimmer in the morning light. More than any other piece of abandoned Forerunner technology, the ship typified its maker's technological mastery. The Dreadnought's engines, for example, were so efficient that even though the Sanshum had only ever managed to bring them partially online, they still generated more than enough power to sustain all of High Charity. Fortitude knew there were many more secrets hidden in the computational pathways that spread throughout the vessel's hull. Soon, he hoped, the Sanshum priest responsible for the Dreadnought's exploration would unlock them all. For as preoccupied as Fortitude was with managing his ministry's vast bureaucracy, part of his mind was still gripped with the same questions as all other Covenant. How exactly had the Forerunners accomplished their transcendence? And how might mere mortals do the same? A sudden wail of anti-grav generators and subsequent shrill cries of protest drew the minister's gaze upward. One of the Ungoy barges had failed to give way to a Sanshum commuting ring, forcing its constituent chairs to break apart. Similar rings were in motion all around the dome, ascending and descending the towers. Junior Sanshum raided the least powerful chairs and traveled in rings of 20 or more, packed arm to arm to maximize their ring's anti-grav field. Senior ministry staffers might manage rings as small as 7, and the sophistication of vice ministers' chairs made it possible for them to commute in trios. But only full ministers, such as Fortitude, rated units sufficiently powerful for individual flight. For a moment, Fortitude thought he too might have to swerve to avoid the plummeting barge. But High Charity's flight control circuits had already corrected their mistake, properly identified the minister's rank, and forced the barge to take evasive action. It dipped precipitously to one side, causing its Ungoy passengers to cling tightly to one another or risk plummeting to their deaths.